next weekend I'm doing a 100-mile bike ride known as a century over in Maryland's Eastern Shore with a couple friends. And it's called a Spring Road Cycling Event. And it comes with pit stops with ice cream and finish line and food and ferries and giveaways and participant water bottles. So should be a pretty fun time. And last weekend I went on about a 50-mile ride with these friends as a bit of training, and we were discussing different pacing and whether we'd stick together as a group, etc. And I said that I was just along for the ride. And when asked what that meant, I elaborated that I wasn't trying to meet any time goals, just to enjoy the ride. But that idiom could be perceived to have a little bit of a negative connotation in the sense that it means to take part, but passively, or to not really be invested in it, or to care about the destination, or sure about whether you want to do it, or to attend some event or participate in some activity without playing an active or central role in the proceedings. I'm going along for the ride to my friend's Spring Road Cycling Event to cheerlead them on and enjoy the finish line food kind of thing. But riding 100 miles is definitely not a passive thing, so to say that I was just along for the ride meant more that I was literally there for the ride, with the twist of making it clear that I wasn't in the driver's seat when it came to pace, but happy to acquiesce and go along with whatever. And so I got to thinking that it'd be fun to do an episode on other idioms that are related to cycling and bikes, because there are a few things that I love more than riding bikes. I love to mountain bike, I love to road bike, I love to tour new places by bike, I love to ride the bike on a quick trip to the local store, I love to bike pack and bike camp and commute to work by bike, rain or shine. I love to just work on my bike to tune it up or to build up a new one. Frankly, I love to just look at bikes. A bit of a cyclopath, I guess, who's a person who's suffering from an extreme love of bicycles. Somebody with a chronic bike riding disorder with abnormal urges to ride. The side effects include sweating and exhilaration and a feeling of freedom. And I'm not the only one. As one of my favorite authors, Jack London, put it, "Ever bike? Now that's something that makes life worth living. Oh, to just grip your handlebars and lay down to it and go ripping and tearing through streets and road, over railroad tracks and bridges, threading crowds, avoiding collisions at 20 miles or more an hour, and wondering all the time when you're going to smash up. Well, now that's something. And then go home again after 3 hours of it, and then to think that tomorrow I can do it all over again." Another of my favorite authors aptly described part of the attraction to seeing the world by bike. Ernest Hemingway said, "It is by riding a bicycle that you learn the contours of a country best, since you have to sweat up the hills and coast down them." Another author who wrote about the power of the bike to make you feel good was Sir Arthur Conan Doyle of Sherlock Holmes fame. "When the spirits are low, when the day appears dark, when work becomes monotonous, when hope hardly seems worth having, just mount a bicycle and go out for a spin down the road, without thought on anything but the ride you are taking." And finally, one more from another author that might seem a bit apocryphal, but it's too nice of a sentiment to not include, so who cares? And that's one from H.G. Wells, who loved bikes and who's purported to have said, "Every time I see an adult on a bicycle, I no longer despair for the future of the human race." And it's not just authors. U.S. presidents have loved bicycles too. President Biden continues to like to ride bikes into his 80s, and photographs of him on vacation on a bike are fairly common, as they were with President Obama. JFK, President Kennedy, said, "Nothing compares to the simple pleasure of riding a bike." And that's an elegant and efficient way of putting the joy of a bike. And not quite as elegant, but no less enthusiastic, we get from President George W. Bush, who was an avid cyclist and mountain biker, the following: "When you ride a bike and get your heart rate up and you're out, after 30 or 40 minutes, your mind tends to expand. It tends to relax." Right on, Bush. You sometimes see as a fender or a frame sticker things like the following: "You are one ride away from a good mood." Or, "Four wheels move your body, two wheels move your soul." Or, "When in doubt, pedal it out." Or, "Burn fat, not oil. or the similar, burn carbohydrates, not hydrocarbons. As the great David Attenborough, voice of planet Earth and so many great nature documentaries, put it, if I can bicycle, I bicycle. Or as Descartes might have said, if bikes had been around in his day, I bike, therefore I am. And no quote fest is complete without something that Albert Einstein or Abraham Lincoln is rumored to have said about it. But the bicycle didn't really start to come into use in the form we know today until after Lincoln's death. So we'll have to rely on Einstein here. And surprisingly, this is one of those Einstein quotes that Einstein himself actually said. And that's, life is like riding a bicycle. To keep your balance, you must keep moving. That's some truth right there. But this is Idiom America, not Quotes About Bikes America. So let's get to some more idioms. And it turns out that there doesn't seem to be that many that directly involve bikes that I can think of. There's the just like riding a bike, which is said of a skill that once learned is never forgotten, but that's more of a simile than an idiom. There's like a fish needs a bike, which comes from the longer, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle. And this one is often attributed to American feminist and political activist Gloria Steinem, but she later clarified that it actually came from the feminist Australian educator, journalist, and politician Irina Dunn, who coined the phrase back in 1970 when she was a student at the University of Sydney, by paraphrasing something that she found in a philosophy textbook, which said that man needs God like a fish needs a bicycle. And this formulation of A needs B like C needs D has been around for a long time, even in a formulation involving fish and bicycles. For example, this usage in the Connecticut newspaper, the Hartford Courant, from December of 1898, the place, Aragon, Spain, didn't need an American consul any more than a cow needs a bicycle, for it had no trade with America, and no American tourist ever dreamed of stopping there. But that's about it for full-on bicycle idioms. But a bike's a pretty simple device, really, that's part of the genius of it, and it can be broken down to just a few components, and they'll provide us with some more idioms, like gears and wheels and pedals and a saddle and some handlebars. Which reminds me of the simple yet, quote, astonishingly complete metamorphosis that Picasso did with his sculpture, Bull's Head, which was first known as Bicycle Seat. And it's a found art object, artwork, that consists of nothing but a bicycle seat welded to the handlebars of a bicycle. And it's a really moving sculpture to me for some reason. I still remember coming across it when it was on exhibition in the Art Gallery of Ontario in Toronto in the summer of 2012, and just being really struck by it. Just the simplicity and transparency and childlike whimsy and imagination behind it. Or maybe I really am just a psychopath who likes to look at bikes to a weird degree. But seriously, Google it, check it out. It's really a cool sculpture in spite of, or maybe because of, its simplicity. But again, as far as idioms go, for the two parts of the Bull's Head or bicycle seat sculpture, there is the handlebar mustache, but that might be about it, and that's pretty self-explanatory. There are some saddle ones, like back in the saddle, meaning to resume doing something after you stop doing it for a period of time. And I really like this one because it does connect to what it feels like riding a bike as you sit back on that bike saddle and start pedaling. It just comes back to you, feels right. But there's sometimes a bit of weariness there if you've been riding for a long time, which the phrase back in the saddle seems to capture. But this one in its origin relates more to the saddle used for riding horses, as do some of the other saddle ones. So let's move on to pedals. If you back pedal, you quickly and often abruptly reverse or retreat from one's position. As soon as I started questioning her story, she back pedaled and said it didn't happen quite like that. He said he'd help, but now he's starting to back pedal. To back pedal also literally means to move the pedals of a bike backwards, which on a fixed gear bicycle or bicycles with back pedal brakes stops the bicycle. And so it's easy to see how back pedal arose from this action to take on its idiomatic meaning. And it does appear to have arisen in connection with cycling and back pedaling to stop the bike. Although there are those that hypothesize that it came from earlier usage of back paddling to stop a boat's forward momentum by paddling backwards, but there's no good evidence for that. And given the bicycle connection to back pedal, you might think that there's one too for soft pedal to make something seem less important or bad than it really is, but nope, that one comes from the foot pedal on a piano that reduces the volume of sound when you press it. Well, let's shift gears away from handlebars and seats and pedals to, well, gears. First, that one, to shift gears, or to change gears, meaning, of course, to suddenly change what you are doing, to move from one topic or thing to another, or to change one's attitude to something, or even just to change the pace of an activity. The meaning is pretty straightforward, related to shifting gears in a car or bike. And this one's pretty flexible, too, in terms of variations. You can gear up for something, gear down for something. You can get into gear, shift into high gear, shift into low gear, throw sand in the gears, grease the gears, and even grind someone's gears to really annoy someone. It really grinds my gears when people litter. Again, some of these are more related to automobiles than bikes. If you have a manual transmission, you might be grinding your gears trying to shift. But if your bike's not well-tuned, you might hear some grinding as well, and it's definitely annoying. But since the theme is cycling idioms, and since it seems like the gears here in these idioms seem to refer more to automobiles or other machines, we'll move on to probably one of my favorite idioms that comes from bicycles, and that's freewheeling, which is an adjective to mean free and loose in some form or manner, or characterized by a disregard for rules or conventions, heedless of social norms or niceties, unconstrained or uninhibited. I really like talking with him because our conversations are always so freewheeling. Or think of Bob Dylan's second album, The Freewheeling Bob Dylan. And this one can also be a verb. To freewheel can be to move, live, or play freely or irresponsibly. But it can also be literally to roll along freely, independent of a gear, which is actually where this one comes from. As free wheel as a noun means a clutch fitted in the rear hub of a bicycle that permits the rear wheel to run on free from the rear sprocket when the pedals are stopped. So the opposite of a fixed gear bicycle, or fixie, which is a bicycle with no such free wheel mechanism, such that the pedals always spin together with the rear wheel. That's like a unicycle, too, for that matter. Although there are a couple special-made unicycles I saw out there that have a free wheel, but they're pretty rare and apparently even harder to ride. If you look at the Google Ngram for this term, there were a couple of sporadic uses of free wheel here and there starting about 1900, but it didn't start to really take off until the 1920s, and from there it rose to the height of its popularity, which was in the 60s, right about the time Bob Dylan released his Freewheelin' album. And from there it's been on a gradual decline in popularity, which is a shame, as it's a great term to describe the freedom and looseness that one feels as their bike freewheels. Keeps rolling forward with no effort from the rider, and makes that glorious freewheeling spinning sound. And speaking of spinning wheels, there's the idiom to spin one's wheels, meaning to expend effort with no result, waste your time or energy idly or frivolously. I'm just spinning my wheels trying to get the other side to produce discovery documents in this litigation. This one arose in the mid-20th century and comes from cars, with the advent of getting stuck in the snow or sand and spinning your wheels and going nowhere. You can also spin your wheels on a bike, on a mountain bike in particular. If you're climbing up a steep trail, going over a wet route, for example, you might spin out pretty good. But it's mainly an automobile phenomenon. And another one that straddles the car-bicycle line is to be a fifth wheel, or a third wheel. And this, of course, is an idiom that refers to someone who tags along with a couple or a group, often feeling out of place or unnecessary. And this one goes back a long time, at least 500 years and probably longer, with the fifth wheel version seeming to be the earlier one and more commonly used one, referring to four-wheeled chariots or carriages early on. Plus, a fifth wheel just evokes better something truly unnecessary, something just along for the ride but kind of out of place, than a third wheel does. Because you do have functional third wheels on vehicles. Think of tricycles, three-wheelers, cycle rickshaws, even motorcycles with a sidecar. But there aren't too many, if any, vehicles with five functional wheels. There is something called a pentacycle, which has one big wheel in the center, kind of penny farthing bike style, surrounded by four little wheels on the outside for stability, called the hen and chicken style for the one big wheel surrounded by four little ones. But it's a really uncommon and kind of gimmicky kind of thing. So fifth wheel probably best captures that idea of somebody just tagging along with a group, but not really part of it in any meaningful way. It also probably gets a little more use, but third wheel is not far behind. If you find yourself using the third wheel idiom more, maybe you're revealing your bike-centric frame of mind, or maybe it's just because it matches up with the numbers better, as it's a better one for reacting to the idea of not wanting to tag along with a couple out on a date, for example, while fifth wheel works better for a bigger group. A bike can have a third wheel and even a fourth when you're first starting out and you put some training wheels on it, which leads to the idiom, take off the training wheels. And literally, of course, this means to remove a pair of miniature wheels that had been affixed to the rear axle of a bike in order to keep it from falling over. And idiomatically, it can have a few meanings, all of which are pretty similar. First, it can mean to remove some source of aid, support, or assistance that had been meant to make a particular activity easier. Come on, take off your training wheels. Your grammar and spelling are good enough that you don't need ChatGPT to check your work. Second, it can mean to remove an inhibitor or restraint that had been put in place to mitigate danger or risk. Lobbyists for the financial industry are pressing the government to take off the training wheels, claiming that the regulations imposed after the financial disaster are no longer necessary. And finally, in the sports context, it can be used to refer to allowing an athlete to reach their full potential, typically by giving them the opportunity to play more or to start. The young quarterback has shown that he has what it takes, so the coach has taken off the training wheels and allowed him to throw more. And this is a great idiom, as anyone who remembers learning how to ride with training wheels or who's taught their kid how to ride with training wheels can attest. It's pretty exhilarating once you take the leap and shrug off that security blanket and ride away balancing on two skinny tires, feeling that thrill and freedom that a bike gives. Which reminds me of something else about bikes, someone once said, one of the guys from Monty Python, and that was something to the effect of, who knew that the day I learned how to ride a bike would turn out to be one of the most important days of my life. Maybe that says something about my life, but in a very real way it was. Well, there are some more wheel idioms, but they're not really bike specific, so that'll do for this episode, I think. And remember, money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a bike. Thanks for listening.